Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This month they're doing Grab Bag, so I picked the perennial classic movie On Deadly Ground starring Steven Seagal. We bring you movie news, and this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, Hello. And the man who has more in common with Haley Joel Osment than he'd personally like to admit, Ryan Preston. So who has a description of this movie?
Well, I'm going to do, there's two of them on IMDb. There's one that is a sentence long, and then there's one that's three paragraphs long. Let's go for the three paragraphs.
Wait. They did three paragraphs on this movie?
Well, they didn't actually do three paragraphs. They did three run-on paragraphs, but that's okay. Forrest Taft is an environmental agent who works for the Aegis Oil Company in Alaska. Aegis Oil's corrupt CEO, Michael Jennings, is the kind of person who doesn't care whether or not oil spills into the ocean or onto the land, just as long as it's making money for him. He actually wrote it like that. Anyways, he even makes commercials that make him look like he cares about the environment. Jennings is almost finished with building his new state-of-the-art oil rig, Aegis One. The problem is that if he doesn't finish building the rig in 13 days, the land rights will be returned to the Eskimos and the Alaskan government. When Jennings finds out that Taft's...
Do you have Randy to read Palmer this?
Has a computer disk that contains information about defective equipment on Aegis One. He sends out goons to murder Palmer. When Taft tries to interview, Jennings tries to kill Taft, but an Eskimo woman named Masu, who introduces Taft to her father, Siluk, the chief of her tribe, rescues Taft.
Okay, you can stop now.
I'm almost done. With Masu's help, Taft begins to trek through the Alaskan wilderness, heading straight for the Aegis One to destroy it before it destroys all of the forest. I have just saved you guys an hour and a half. Goodbye.
By the way, this is the perfect Steven.
That is word for word.
By the way, this is the perfect Steven Seagal movie because it was produced and directed by Steven Seagal. All you needed to finish the trifecta was actually have him write it.
I don't think he wrote it. I think he just got this from this guy and put the movie together.
This was actually written by somebody, believe it or not. It was written by Ed Horowitz and Robin U. Rusin, who probably haven't worked a single day since. And by the way, this is almost the end of his cinematic movie career. The last movie he did, there was one more movie after he did this. And then he no longer did theater movies.
Are you talking about Steven Seagal?
Yeah.
No, he did a couple theater
movies. No, he only did one more after this, if I remember correctly. It was Fire Down Below or something like that.
This movie was coming right off the heels of the success of
Under Siege,
which is why they got financing in the first place. I mean, there were so many times this movie should have been shit canned. For apparently even God didn't want this movie made because it was right during the 94 quake over here in Northridge. James, you were in town at that time, weren't you? Yeah. So that was a big one. The roof of Technicolor, the people who produced the prints for the movies back then, this is obviously before digital, caved in and destroyed the negatives, and some asshole sat there and painstakingly put that shit back together.
Well, he's done a lot more movies since, but I don't think there's a whole lot of movies after this that were actually in theaters.
Hold on a second. I don't want to gloss over the war crime of this person putting the negative back together of this movie.
Right? Oh, no, it gets worse. Here is my all-time favorite quote from anybody who's ever been in this movie, and I quote Michael Caine, "I was so desperate I did a movie with Steven Seagal in Alaska called On Deadly Ground."
Well, okay, he went on to further explain that movie, just to play devil's advocate, that he didn't dislike working with Steven Seagal. It was just the fact that they were in Alaska and it's freezing balls.
He was desperate to do a movie with Steven Seagal. That's the issue.
He rephrased it and said that, no, he was technically, it was because he was working in Alaska. He actually enjoyed working with Steven Seagal.
Yeah, but the fact he wanted to work with Steven Seagal.
Well, it's amazing the lofty names that I've sort of read as
Robin,
possible
U. Russian?
For the Michael Caine role. It was kind of like Anthony Hopkins was on that list, and it's like, boy, wow, you guys have some lofty goals, man.
Oh, by the way, this is an award-winning movie. It got a Golden Raspberry Award, and this won the worst director for it.
Yeah, you know, I would say it's worth some raspberries. That's like the Rhino Awards.
Well, I'll tell you what it wasn't worth was the $50 million budget they used to put this piece of shit together. I mean, there was just about every sort of like thing that makes us angry when watching an action movie. I mean, obviously we were probably 10 watching this movie or something.
We were 10. You were like
94.
You were probably 13. Four and a half.
We were way too old to be liking this kind of shit.
What do you mean? You know, James and I were old enough.
So, you know, my big thing is, you know, he's some kung fu badass, right? You know, he's got all this mad skills, and then he's sitting at a bar and an old dude sneaks up on him. And then he goes, "Don't sneak up on me. I almost shot you in the face." What?
Yeah, there's all kinds of inconsistencies about this thing.
And fart and pull the gun out of there?
And don't forget about all the first thing.
Oh, it's philosophical crap?
Yeah, the philosophical stuff throughout this movie is ridiculous. Like, you know, what does it take? What is the measure of a man?
And then the measure of a man.
And then you had the really weird, like, religious stuff in the movie.
What, you mean peyote? Peyote is no joke, you people out there.
Yeah,
no,
seriously, I mean, guys. Don't mess around with peyote.
Yeah, you don't mess around with mescaline.
You have to have a person from a culture lead you through that kind of thing. It's not something to...
Yeah, mescaline is serious, dude.
Seriously. Don't drip that shit in your eyeballs. Don't do it to those movies.
And the other part, the ending scene of the movie when he's sitting in that tribal council giving him the potion, that was originally 11 minutes long. Yes, 11 minutes long. At the end of this movie, I was like, I'm done.
You know,
it's the most heavy-handed message I've ever seen in a movie. You know,
the closest
aside from that movie Crash back in the day, that was great.
Wait. The NC-17 movie Crash or the actual?
No. The popular movie Crash, not the sort of cult weird movie
Crash. For people out there, there is a difference.
There is a difference. Don't watch
a big difference.
The last movie that this was heavy handed happened to have a former vice president in it.
Well, see, yeah, but also the bitch of it is how in love with himself Steven Seagal is. You know what I mean? This whole movie was like, hey, look at how cool I am.
No, wait, you forgot the part. Now, do you remember all of his movies? If you guys ever watch any of his movies, look for this one scene. And the scene I'm talking about is the scene in every movie where they go, "Who is this guy?"
Oh, yeah.
Every single one, they have the "Who is this guy?" moment. And then it comes out with the whole, "He is too classified for you low-life scum to know who he is."
So here's one.
Every time.
And actually, there were a couple in this movie. Here is one. He was talking to Magruder. He was talking to Michael Jennings. "You want to know who he is? Try this. Delve down into the deepest..." Sorry, I can barely get through this. This is some bullshit.
I don't know how he got through it.
Deepest bowels of your soul, try to imagine the ultimate fucking nightmare, and that won't come close to this son of a bitch when he's pissed.
Okay.
Yeah, an old guy can sneak up to him.
I know that it's unfair to start talking plot holes about this movie, because we could sit here for a couple of hours doing that, but did the guy that played... What was it? MacGruber? What was his...
Oh.
What was his stupid name? In the movie, anyway,
it was James McGinley. John McGinley
to get that job, because he basically was like look, a squirrel, and shoots it.
Oh no, this guy was jumpy. I mean, this guy was...
It was the most insane perceived threat I've ever seen. Like really, that's the guy literally put his hands up and took two steps forward, and you were like, gun, you know. Not to mention when he's saying, like, to Arlie Ermey, who, by the way, had the best lines in the movie, which I'm sure he brought to the table.
Yeah.
He's sitting there talking to the guy in the helicopter, and he's like, "How do you not have any knowledge of who this guy is before he worked for your company?" And he's like, "I don't know. It didn't come up in our report." It's like, first of all,
we don't think it's germane to capturing him.
Yeah, that's the most asinine thing I've ever heard. But not to mention, ask Michael Caine. He seems to know exactly what this dude is capable of.
Yeah.
Michael Caine was smart.
Keeping his mouth shut about this guy's supposed past.
And unfortunately, I can't find the lines that Arlie Ermey did. And
really? They're not in there?
I didn't see it. They're probably there, but I'm going too fast. But the best thing about this movie is, besides the amazingly fast cut, you like... Watch the action sequences. They're really fast cut. My guess, they must have had a bunch of cameras because they knew they were only going to get one shot because of how big of a piece of shit allegedly Steven Seagal is.
Not to mention the weird use of slow motion in a couple of points.
Oh, yeah. Well,
slow motion when he grabbed a guy by the balls and like threw him down.
Yeah, that was awfully homoerotic for him.
Did you guys ever find that? Did you guys catch that one scene where he admitted to liking to blow things?
Away.
The what?
No. He likes to blow things.
Oh.
In the movie, Steven Seagal admits to liking to blow things. Now,
and apparently...
That's just really dirty, Seagal. Just dirty.
Apparently, if you want to bang Steven Seagal, all you need is 350 grand, because he'll do anything once, I think is what he said, right?
Yeah, 350 grand. He'll do anything once. Now, the other one that really kind of annoyed me is, you know, that one scene where he's sitting there, like, do you ride good?
What?
What?
His grammar is poor in the film. It pissed me off.
Wait,
speak English.
Wait, hold on. Out of all the issues with this movie, his grammar is the biggest one?
Yeah, it's like, did you have somebody proofread your shit? But the funniest scene to me, in the entire movie is when the guy's sitting up there and he's like, okay, the guy's coming. All right. Should I have my buttstock in or my buttstock out? Because when it's in, I feel like a badass. But when it's out, I feel like a pussy.
Oh, so.
Did you catch that one?
So
That was hilarious. And then they come up and he sits there and dies.
So I'm kind of.
You know what? I will give the movie one bit of credit.
It is funny.
Whoever was handling their weapons actually brought some pretty nifty shit to the table.
Yeah, they did.
And they didn't really skimp out on kind of like showing the explanation, like oh, here's a bomb that doesn't look like a clock attached to a block of Play-Doh, you know, or whatever.
This was at least, the best thing is that this movie at least is funny, which is one of the reasons I enjoy watching it, because if you take this movie seriously, you've honestly got something wrong with you.
Well, my favorite line
Hold on
is
a second.
This.
You can't qualify that as funny just because it's funny to you. They had no intention of making this movie funny.
Which, by the way, is the reason why I find it funny. My version of a comedy.
Now, I was just talking about the buttstock scene, right? Where the guy's sitting there and talking about it, right? The buttstock in and out. Which one made him feel better? And his line right after that is, because when I kill the SOB, I want to feel good about myself. You think that movie has that line and they're not intending to have some humor?
Okay, that one line and all the heavy-handed don't
he'll drink gasoline just to piss on your campfire.
That was Arlie Ermey again. I said that.
I'm really pissed. I'm looking for that line just because I want to read it, because it's out of all of moviedom, that's one of my all-time favorite lines, just because it's so shit. It's just such a crap line.
Well, it's so Arlie Ermey. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that he's known for coming up with.
And I don't even
credit the writers with that.
Now, my issue with Arlie Ermey in this film is I know that the dude is not going to sit there and let Steven Seagal get within disarming range before he shoots.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up.
I mean, Arlie Ermey is the guy who is not going to talk. He's going to shoot. If he's going to shoot, he's going
to
shoot.
You had to jump on that dude for like 14 feet and walked right up to him.
Yeah.
Get a shotgun, man. Get a shotgun.
Oh, so here's the quote, if this website decides to load for me. We're not dealing with a student here. We're dealing with a professional. When the military has a job that can't fail, he's the one they call in to train the troops. You could drop this guy off in Antarctica in a pair of bikini trunks without his toothbrush, and tomorrow morning he's going to show up at the side of your pool with a $1 million smile and a fistful of pesos. This is the type of guy that drink a gallon of gasoline just so he could piss on your campfire. Which is James's right. It's every single one of Seagal's characters, even in fucking Glimmer Man. Literally one of the worst movies ever made. Same character.
Yeah.
Just a little more like, you know, too much ganja.
Yeah, well, what's funny is you got this guy who's like the most special forces dude you can imagine, and he always has these shitty jobs.
Yeah.
Like he's a cook on a freaking submarine.
Or the battleship. The Missouri.
That's right. Well, yeah, it was
the most famous battleship ever. If you're gonna, you know, come on, man.
Or just like, you know, some deckhand on something, you know what I mean? Like just some like average Joe worker. It's like, dude, get a job teaching security or something.
Yeah. Or teaching kindergarten cop.
Right, there you go. Little bastards need some discipline.
Oh,
I got a penis and they have a vagina.
Love it.
Oh my God. Really?
I just proved John wrong. According to IMDb, Glimmer Man is almost a full point better than on Deadly Ground.
That's not saying much about either movie, honestly.
It just means more people have seen Glimmer Man.
More people have probably seen Under Siege 2 Dark Territory than this movie.
Oh, God.
Which...
Okay, so all the nitpicking and everything. Seagal, I think you're just a bloated piece of crap. But I give your movie a 1.
Oh, something I actually didn't know. Here's the tagline to this movie. His battle to save the Alaskan wilderness and protect its people can only be won. By
now,
himself,
as soon as they went into the preachy section of this movie, I turned that 6 minutes off.
Yeah.
Just saying, guys, I didn't go all the way to the end. I've done it before, and I've regretted it.
And I want to point out that I also made a similar mistake in the past, and I skipped through some of the middle shit, too.
I actually like this movie because literally I can't watch this movie and not laugh. This, to me, is the definition of a comedy. And yes, I'm including Steven Seagal as being a comedic actor because his timing's hilarious. But in the scale of things, this is definitely a 1.
I see Ryan going lower.
I'll be generous just because it makes me laugh.
Is that a thing?
I think we can make it a thing.
Can we give, I mean, you said we added the 0.5s. Can I just do a 0.5? I mean, if there was ever a movie that friggin' deserved it.
Yeah, give it a 0.5.
Hey, can I take mine back and go 0.05?
Nope.
Damn.
Nope. It's too late. You can't.
Yeah, I've seriously blown alcohol contents. They were a higher percentage.
So if anybody wonders why I bitch on comedies but love this movie was a comedy to me because every time I see it, I roll on the floor laughing.
Yeah.
And so...
Wow.
So we're going to switch to the TV show. We did the TV show Blindside.
Blindside. I guess John did Blindside.
Close. I'm close enough. Now I'll let you go, James. I'm still laughing about the other movie.
You know what? I'll actually watch a couple more episodes of this. But the problem I have is really you had to go with the Navy SEAL? Did you have to pick a Navy SEAL, people? Is that because they're cool these days?
I actually
that's exactly why, James.
My biggest problem so far is they delivered something towards the end of the movie that I thought should have waited.
Yeah,
because they automatically said, "Oh yes, they showed her willing to get whatever injected into her." That should have been something that I thought should have waited.
Episodes down. Yeah, my thing is that, you know, there's that scene when they get into the Statue of Liberty, she gets a bullet graze, and she cries about it? What Navy SEAL cries about a bloody graze?
Not to mention that, dude's got a gun drawn on the Chinese guy. Chinese guy pulls a gun, she gets shot, and he doesn't shoot back. He's like, oh, what happened over here?
Yeah.
Now, look, I wasn't in the military or wasn't a cop or anything, but
you were?
It seems to be pretty standard kind of protocol. Eliminate threat, then check on wounded victim, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm down with.
Again, civilian opinion. So why is that kind of thing? I mean, and everything else seemed to be pretty legit as far as, you know, he didn't have the gun way out in front of him and things like that. And you didn't notice any weird trigger discipline problems or.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, I'll give it a couple more episodes, see if it grows on me, but...
Yeah, it had a couple intriguing things in it, especially that end scene was like, okay, you bastards, you at least got me for one more.
Yeah.
I just hope it doesn't turn into a cop show.
It's going to. That's what it looks like.
At the trainer guy already kind of watching her and seeing what she's doing. So they didn't have to throw in the, yes, I know I'm going to lose all my memory scenes. I think the training guy was enough intrigue for me to be like.
I have a feeling this is going to turn into like a buddy cop episode, TV show, where you have this girl and this, you know, so shenanigans happen as they solve crimes. Yes.
Yeah, something like that, where they're using this chick as basically a glowing briefcase from Pulp Fiction. I mean, it's instead of clues at a crime scene, it's the clues on her body.
Exactly. I totally see the tone on this movie going on this TV show going down, because the tone on this movie at least was serious.
It's a show, for Christ's sake, John.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know. I can totally see this movie losing it. TV show losing its tone over time. Be like the TV show Numbers and some of the other stuff like
that. Yeah, exactly. Those kinds of things. I mean, hopefully it maybe finds a groove, because it definitely seemed a little bit darker, you know, in tone. But obviously, still network, still pulls punches. And it just, as long as it doesn't fall into this procedural kind of you know, what was that other show? The How to Get Away with Murder started out kind of like that. And it's like, oh, what am I going to watch? 11 episodes of this classroom.
So yeah. What, I don't remember. Quantica. What channel was this on?
Yeah. I think CBS.
Okay. Because I actually think right away that's going to be the issue. I think if this was on like cable, I don't think it would lose its,
lose its appeal,
but with the alphabet channels, they can't seem to figure out the stroke enough to keep a TV show the same.
One of their attempts to redeem themselves.
See, I don't think they're going to be able to beat the feeling of Breaking Bad and The Walking Dead, which all signs I've seen, they keep the same feeling throughout the show.
Or Banshee.
Well, they have a larger arc that they try to tell, instead of like it's like this sort of singular self-contained episode, and then the last 15 seconds they show you another piece of the larger puzzle, and it's like, okay, how about write that shit in throughout the episode that I'm watching, so I'm watching an evolving process, as opposed to this like, oh, new crime scene today, huh, boss?
I think they kind of did that a little bit
with the tattoo of the numbers, and the chick got a hold of the file. Realizing the guy watching So I think they're trying that. You and John are saying they're going to do that thing at the end. Like, here's the real hook in case you didn't catch all the little hints.
Because if you notice, it already turned into a procedural police drama halfway through the TV show.
Yeah, that kind of annoyed me.
You know? So, yeah, no, I just don't see this lasting. I bet this will probably get a year, maybe two, if...
I mean, yeah, I think they've been slated for like 9 episodes. I don't know if that's just for a mid-season break. So they might have like a 13 episode run or something. But I don't know. I mean, they got some work to do if they in the episodes that they got.
You see, I still think the biggest thing is standard alphabet channels just don't get story arcs. They don't know how to tell stories within an arc.
There's only so much that they're really allowed to do, and unfortunately, they've been doing it so long that they've really used up kind of all of their original avenues.
Oh, no,
so
totally.
So really left to people like AMC or the HBOs or then the pay cable channels.
But nobody's really looking for a new Law & Order, CSI.
I still think you could do like something similar to Breaking Bad or Sons of Anarchy on an alphabet channel. They would have to be toned down. No, the question is, the question would be, would anybody watch it? No.
Well, see, that's the thing. A lot of these shows, it's so dependent on the longevity of it. I mean, you know, let's be honest. I mean, they're trying to keep their people working, you know, actors and filmmakers and TV producers and things. You get one project for a while and you hope it lasts, because there's probably going to be a long time in between that and your next one. You know, so it becomes about this, how long can we keep this train a rolling? You know,
like CSI lasting, what, 15 years?
Oh, God.
Seriously, you know, and not everybody is capable of writing something like Breaking Bad. So, you know, you don't really have these people that can think that far ahead. I mean, it becomes about laying track in front of a train that's already moving.
All right. So just
we got to move on a little bit. We're getting way behind.
Just let you know, we do have a Facebook page. Do you love us, hate us? Hey, read us. Well, read your hate mail on air if it's funny. Be creative, please. We're begging, something besides you suck. So here's something I never thought I would say. There's going to be a Goonies 2.
No.
How? No.
And I'm trying to figure out how you make a sequel when it's been 20 plus, 25 plus years since the original came out.
because all of the characters have kids, and all their kids go to school together, and their kid or their parents are going to send them to some weird summer camp where some treasure's buried.
And then one of,
and then hey, you guys,
and that's how Friday the 13th started.
Yeah,
I just can't believe they're making a Goonies 2. I mean, of course they did make an 8mm 2. I thought that was a little extreme.
Yeah, well, Goonies is one of those sort of prime examples that everybody brings up these days of like, oh, remember that thing from your childhood that you loved? Not as good as you remember. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost become iconic for that reason lately. You know, where every time I hear it mentioned, somebody's mentioning like, oh, yeah, it doesn't hold up. I mean, and it's true, but it spoke to a really specific age at a really specific generation with really specific things. It was lightning in a bottle at that time.
I still think for that age, it still hold up. This is it's definitely not a movie for adults.
It holds up out of nostalgia for something that you liked when you were a kid. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It
just
subconsciously reminds you of a better time. You know?
I screwed myself. I watched it again.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I kind of want to watch it again, but I'm like you. I was just like, I can't get myself to watch it because I know I'm going to hate it because then I want to pick it
apart.
It's
still pretty culty. You know what I mean? And it has those kinds of lovely watermarks of a sort of a low budget cult hit. But yeah, it's disappointing still. But man, why would you can't capture that same thing with a sequel. You're capturing the name as a draw. Yeah. This is a money grab.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, like 30 years after, I mean, that's, it's a total money grab because I would have thought, okay, you're going to do a money grab, do a sequel 5-10 years after the fact, not this late in the game.
No, see, there's an algorithm when it comes to shit like this that people, all they do is sit in dark, really humid rooms and talk about ways to, you know, put things out in a certain way.
And their mother's
face. This is a classic example of you wait until the age group that liked the movie has grown up, has kids that were the same age that they are when you liked the movie.
So now you get that's why My Girl 2 failed.
35-year-olds, you know, 41-year-olds who loved Goonies, and they're going to take their 10-year-old to go see it.
Did you pick that?
No.
Oh, that was Ryan?
What?
Oh, wait, My Girl, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, I picked My Girl, but I didn't pick My Girl 2.
Yeah, you're still crapping on yourself there.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, My Girl 2 was released not like Ryan's little algorithm was saying.
Yes.
It came out, what, 8 years, 5 years?
Yeah, because the first movie sucked so bad, they needed to recoup their costs. So they made another one.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was actually okay with that one because the same group of people were at a different stage of their lives, you know what I mean? And it was like about teenage stuff as opposed to the very, very pre-pubescent kind of stuff.
Wow. So I just.
You got anything else we can shit on?
Yeah, I just found out that Will Smith is going to be Deadshot.
I already told you no.
So what do you think about that?
Will Smith is going to be Deadshot?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm totally okay with that.
Really? What? Why?
Yeah.
Are you thinking Hancock?
Will Smith is a great actor. He could play the fucking shark from Jaws if he wanted to. I'm not going to get bogged down in this. He needs to be whiter. He needs to be a certain. He needs to look whatever. Who cares? You know, it could be like Green Lantern. They've had like four or five of them.
Well, Green Lantern makes sense because there's other Green Lanterns.
Right, I get it. But at the same time, it makes no difference to his character.
Are you thinking he's going to do it like he did Hancock? Because I liked Hancock.
Oh, I love Hancock. But he's going to do it like Deadshot. Yeah. He's going to play Deadshot.
He's going to have to be, I think. Possibly this will change his career because in order to do Deadshot, he's going to have to play a very gritty character.
Yeah, even very more, mean, gritty character.
Even I'd say different from Hancock.
Well, the guy's going to be heartless.
Yeah.
Deadshot's heartless.
Are we saying that this individual is not capable of such a thing?
I just you don't see a lot of that in his career. If he plays it like that,
that doesn't matter. He's obviously pulled off things that, you know, you haven't seen before he did it.
So. Oh, no, I don't disagree. But for me, just because of his past playing a movie, a role like this, I think it's a bit of a stretch. So I'm a little bit skeptical.
I don't think so at all. I think he's just probably perfect for it. I
just like Heath Ledger playing the Joker. I'm a little bit skeptical, but I'm willing to be surprised.
You like Brokeback Mountain. What are you talking about?
Oh, no. The movie? What? I've never seen that one. I love the guy as an actor.
I might get punched tonight.
Not wearing glasses. The other one, just curious, is the Vin Diesel's new movie. What is it? Witch Hunter? Did any of you see the trailer?
Yes.
Witch Hunter. Didn't we just have a stupid Witch Hunter movie with like Nick Cage or something? Yep.
Yeah, but this one's... I think this one was supposed to come out last year sometime.
I don't know. I don't want to see it. You know, actually, as far as I'm concerned, Vin Diesel needs to stop doing shitty movies.
But he's pretty much done his whole career on bad movies. Fast and Furious.
Pitch Black wasn't a bad movie.
Yes, the second and third one were.
True.
There was a third one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the third one?
Riddick.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, so he's in Triple X. He's made a career out of bad movies. I mean, hell, Ron Perlman's made a career out of it, too.
Are you saying that, you know, he's the new Nick Cage?
No, that's Ron Perlman.
No. Ron Perlman's like, what's his name?
Because Ron Perlman's...
Deuce Bigelow.
Ron Perlman
is Deuce Bigelow, but for
action movies?
Yeah, for the action part.
Ron Perlman's the man that never says no.
What Deuce Bigelow's name? Rob Schneider. Thank you. Thank you jackasses, for telling me his name.
Like, I remembered that guy's name. I don't like him to begin with, so, like, I'm going to tell you that.
You know, because Rob Schneider doesn't say no to any comedy role.
Especially if Adam Sandler's in it.
True.
Yeah, well, what's funny to me is that casting directors didn't learn how to say no to Ron Perlman.
Dude, casting directors don't say no.
he must have greased some palms in there somewhere.
It was palms? The casting couch.
Palms? Greased palms?
Yeah, are you sure? Palm.
Like a figurative, like a tree.
Yeah, he had somebody dropping off envelopes, you know. Don't get me wrong, I love that dude in Sons of Anarchy, but that doesn't redeem basically every other thing that he's done.
Oh, no, I've always liked Ron Perlman. I actually liked him in Hellboy. I'm hoping Guillermo del Toro somehow is able to finish the third one. Because that movie is dying to be a trilogy.
Yeah, he just walked away from it pretty much.
He's definitely had a lot more interesting things lately.
What the hell happened to Pinocchio, mister?
I know, right? That would have been interesting.
I've been waiting for that one for, 3 years practically?
You know what I keep saying that needs to be made as a live action, like a really earnest story of it?
Frosty the Snowman.
Aladdin. Or some version of the Thousand and One Nights, Rape
Night. I think they have one of those in the works, actually.
That would be terrific, because it's a great time for it, you know what I mean? And you can still have an awesome genie.
Yeah. Yeah, did you see that thing I posted the other day of Robin Williams reborn in that one guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that before.
Well, dude, that guy could do some genie.
So next week's pick is James's pick, and I have a suspicion he's going to get back at me for this.
I'm going to jump out on a limb, and I'm going to do a movie I haven't seen.
Okay.
Ex Machina.
Oh.
Ex Machina?
Shut your hole.
Is that actually how you say that?
Yes.
He's trying to be Asian.
That's because that's the one about the robot girl, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the TV show, did we settle on that, Ryan?
I think you had settled on that. Yeah.
Okay, so next week we are going to be doing Into the Badlands.
So we're doing Ex Machina or Machina or whatever.
Machina. Fuck you, Machina. Ryan.
Close enough.
Whore.
And what he said earlier.
Yes, I cussed at Ryan.
He's
trying to show me up. Into the Badlands.
Thank you. So we're doing Into the Badlands, the TV show. Ex Machina, the movie. No, I'm tired. As always, thank you for watching.
Goodbye.